Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. And good morning to you, Dwayne Ocker.
Good morning, LaVon. I'm honored to be on what I think is probably one of the longest running talk shows here in Southwest Iowa, isn't it?
Maybe. Not close to those in Shenandoah, but right in this neighborhood, that's probably right. 18 years.
That's fantastic.
And part of the joy is getting to visit with people like you and, you know, so many interesting people. Now, I know a couple years ago, we talked about from Troublesome Creek. Now we're going to go back to Troublesome Creek. So give us just a brief synopsis of this book.
Well, back to Troublesome Creek, it's the things that we did, encounters after our time at Kansas State University, but went into the federal bureaucracy and our foreign aid program and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and then a long-time goal came back to the farm. After George H.W. Bush was defeated for re-election and Bill Clinton was elected, my job ended. I was a political appointee. Had a long-term goal of coming back and operating our home farm, and so that was the time to do that. Even though we could have been drawing Social Security, why took on a challenge.
What fun is that? And you found many changes. I know you stayed in touch with your farm the entire time that you were away from here. I know you made a lot of visits to the extension office when I was there, so I know you kept in touch. But still, when you're kind of more taking command, perhaps being right there, a lot of changes.
A lot of changes. I tell people that there were some changes that I did not like.
Really?
But I decided that, you know, from 45 years earlier, but I decided it was a lot more, well, I had two choices. I could carry a placard in protest, the changes, or I could accept them and adapt to them. And I found that adapting to them and was more profitable and a lot more fun.
Yes, just move on. And that's kind of, I think with your book, it's sort of the adventure continues. And just to remind folks, the first book from Troublesome Creek was when you were growing up, 30s and 40s, and then we have this time when you were at the universities. But now you're out in the world. And that's pretty exciting about the stories you have here out in the world.
Well, we've had a lot of exciting things. And I did include in this, Back to Troublesome Creek, some international experiences that I had while in universities. The first one way back in 1961 when I was teaching animal science at Iowa State. Went down to Argentina to review some of their secondary agricultural high schools that were scattered around the country and run by some by the Ministry of Agriculture, some by a Catholic order, the Salesian Fathers. And so I learned a lot about what international work was.
And were you surprised? You know, sometimes I think we get in this mindset that the United States is the best. We are the smartest. We are the top of everything. But sometimes we can learn from other people.
We learn that there are creative people in every culture, every society that I've gone to. They may lack resources. They may lack government structure. They may lack the democracy, the freedom of enterprise that we have, but they are still creative. And one of the examples was in Botswana, where they were seeding grain sorghum. That's their main crop. And we had some scientists over there from Kansas State, and they were seeding the sorghum on the ground and then plowing it. And I said, that's not very wise. You know, there'll be seed will go in at varying depths. And the woman farmer said to me, well, now that's our security. If it rains, those that end up in a shallow soil will grow and flourish. If it doesn't rain, the deeper ones will eventually germinate and we can live through the winter.
Pretty smart thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, risk avoidance.
Yes. Now, what about schools in various countries? What are some of the experiences you've found in schools?
Well, I visit a lot of schools and universities and research institutes, and one of the most fascinating things to me was that when I was with a research institute or a university or a school in Southeast Asia, that might be the Philippines or Thailand or Indonesia, on the lobby walls would be a five-year plan or the mission and the goals, what they wanted to achieve the next 5 or 10 years. In contrast, when I was in Eastern Europe, especially the southern part of Eastern Europe, Bulgaria, the Republic of Georgia, in other words, they were worshiping their founders. there was so much tradition. Tradition was worshipped. I was at a dinner one evening, and we toasted the founders. We toasted the parents of the director. We toasted my parents. Always the focus was on the tradition.
So kind of looking back rather than looking ahead.
Looking back rather than looking forward. And as we've watched the increased economic activity in Southeast Asia over the last 25 years, I understand.
And I know you kind of keep up with things, so you're seeing this continuing, this same kind of path
I see this continuing. It's both in Eastern Europe, it's both long-term tradition, but it's also the linkages to the Soviet Socialist Republic and the constraints on human initiative that was imposed there. And so there's a combination of things that keep that section from really developing economically.
So saying that, let's talk a bit about China, one of the biggest communist countries. And is that the same as the folks who are tied to the Russian?
China is different. China is clearly a communist government. But when I was there in 1979 as a part of a trade mission with our Kansas governor, I ran into a conversation with a junior minister. I said, and he was trained in the United States, and I said, why did you come back to China after working in a capitalist country? What can you contribute? He said, I came back to serve my people, and communism will adapt to serve its people. I didn't fully understand that, but I got some clues that they turned some of the wheat farmers loose to sell some of their extra produce. And now, today, from the year 2000 on, it's been very evident. People have their own cars, they make money, they have a capitalistic society within a communist-controlled government. I've had the privilege of visiting some time in Vietnam. Same thing there. I've never seen more aggressive merchandising under a communist political structure than in Vietnam. Same thing's going on in China.
So I heard you say it's the government is one thing, but the culture and the way people live is another.
Yes, and the communist leadership has learned that by turning people loose to produce and get rewarded for their production, that they'll keep their people more content. Now they have problems, just like we have problems in the United States. But they've learned that they can be competitive in this global economy. And boy, is China competing in the global economy?
It is. Probably should all take lessons from that. We can all learn from that. Now, one of the things that people often want to know about when you travel around the world is about the food and drink, because I'm sure most of the time you were an honored guest. You know, you were invited. And so you are expected to eat the food that they offer you because you are a special guest.
Well, one of my later visits was in northern part of China in the early 2000s. And this is largely Muslim country. So there was no pork on the menu. There was no alcohol served at the meals, in contrast to the southern or central China, where there'd be a lot of high alcohol drinks being served. But I recall going into after visiting two or three dairy farms, went into a community luncheon, and I was the honored guest. And so they served the fermented eggs, which are traditional, and then we were given another item that turned out to be, looked like a gelatinous seafood item. I wasn't sure what it was, but it was lamb tendons and pickled sections of rooster combs.
Don't let anything go to waste, right?
These were delicacies.
Okay.
And to me, in terms of partaking, it's only a matter of attitude and reality. People have been eating these for years, and those latter items are simply more animal protein, the same chemical structure as the tendons in a beef roast. Then at the end of the meal, they said, "Do you like turtle soup?" I said, "Sure." So they brought us each a bowl of turtle soup, but the honored guest got the shell, and so I had the privilege of chewing a little bit on the more tender sections of the edge of the shell.
All right, lots of experiences, and I know you're working on a tips for readers, and we'll get to talk about that again. But your book, I guess we should mention where that's going to be available.
It'll be available at the Tinderbox on 5th and Chestnut. I hope later this week, but I'm not certain. I know a batch of them is being shipped right now.
All right.
I'd be glad to autograph for anybody.
All right. I know people are going to be anxious to continue your story. So we want to thank you very much, Dwayne Ocker, for coming in this morning. And here's a thought. A book is a version of the world. Turn a page, see the world in a new way.